Hey, everybody, it's Chris Mannix with The Vertical, and welcome to The Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix, where I check in with some of the top players, coaches, and analysts across the NBA. My guest this week is Bobby Marks, the Vertical front office insider and former assistant GM with the Brooklyn Nets. We cover a wide range of topics in this interview, including what kind of problem the Sixers have on their hands with Nerlens Noel.
He's been fair in the time he's played. I mean, there's been some good moments. There's been some not so good moments. If you put him on a trade market, I don't know what you can possibly get back.
And what Bobby would do if he was running the Sacramento Kings in dealing with DeMarcus Cousins.
I would suspend them, Chris.
They don't have it in them. They don't. They don't have the stones to do it.
I know, because he's from a trade standpoint, I'm sure that would hurt his value. But what hasn't hurt his value right now, Chris?
All that and more on The Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. Well, it's been an interesting last couple of weeks in the NBA. There's a new collective bargaining agreement. You have a superstar that sees his trade value diminished by the hour. And you have an ongoing situation in Philadelphia that may be a little more tricky to resolve than some people think. To talk more about that, let's bring in Bobby Marks, the Vertical front office insider, the former assistant GM of the Brooklyn Nets. Bobby, how's it going, man?
I'm doing wonderful, Chris. How are you?
Oh, man. I'm trying to figure out exactly what Nerlens Noel is doing in Philadelphia, because this is a guy that missed a significant chunk of the early part of the season coming back from injury. Now that he is back, he gripes about minutes, and Brett Brown has taken him out of the rotation entirely, choosing instead to go with that kind of Okafor, Joel Embiid front court, which is horrible defensively, and plant Noel on the bench. What do you make of that situation?
Well, it's interesting in two regards. It's a player who's in his last year of his contract and a player who's been injured most of his career in Philadelphia. You know, he missed his first year down there with that the injury from his days in Kentucky. He's been fair in the time he's played. I mean, there's been some good moments. There's been some not so good moments. I don't know. I hate to say, I don't know what his body of work right now is, Chris. And if you put him on a trade market, I don't know what you can possibly get back. Can you get a first round pick maybe? And then that team's got the headache in trying to re-sign him and deal with from a financial angle. And we talked about it, what happens when these guys come back, and now you see it. But besides really Embiid, who was really good in the Brooklyn game. Him and Okafor have been spotty at best, and Noel, we've only seen a small sample this year.
I would give up a mid to even high first round pick for Jahlil Okafor. I would, just because he's a scorer, and I don't know how many of those guys exist in the NBA, the pure post scorers that Okafor is. I'd be far more reluctant at this point, despite the fact that he's an elite defender, to give one up for Noel, because what is he? Is he a guy that on a winning team can play 30 plus minutes? I don't know the answer to that yet. I think Okafor maybe could be if somebody can get to him and make him a little bit better defensively. But I think if he's a full-time five, not playing next to Embiid, he might be a little bit better. I just don't see, the offensive upside in Nerlens Noel. And frankly, Bobby, in today's NBA, if you're going to be a four man, and that's kind of what Noel is, sort of a 4-5, you better be able to space the floor, and he can't do that. So I think Philadelphia's going to have a lot of problems trying to move him.
Well, especially that he's been in a position there in Philadelphia. They've had a losing product, since he's been there. I always like to see guys play, and I always say when the games mean something. So what's to say that when if you put him in a different situation that he's going to flourish? I think he's really going to need a good point guard wherever he does go. So when you look to, move players to possibly obtain him, that's the big challenge. And, we talked about it with Woj last week. It's the expiring contracts. And when you give up a lot of assets, either players or picks, then you feel the pressure that you have to re-sign that player.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a problem they'll have to deal with in Philadelphia another day. I wonder if we're on the Brett Brown watch yet, and I hope not. Because I think Brett's a great guy, and I think he's a very good coach who's been put kind of in an impossible situation. But when you have new management that is in place in the Colangelos, who have no real ties to Brett Brown, I know he was given that extension technically while I think Jerry was initially on the job, but he's not Brian's guy. And I always thought, Bobby, that if Mike D'Antoni were still on his bench, Brett Brown might not have lasted this long. I mean, there might have been a push from the Colangelos to replace him with Mike D'Antoni. Do you think we're on the Brett Brown watch right now as we enter the new calendar year?
I don't, Chris, and I say that because either it's been an inferior product the last couple of years, or now we see a team that's been, you know, with injuries. We see Jared Bayless out for the year. Noel has been in and out. You're trying to figure out what you have. You've got a new point guard in Rodriguez. You've got Gerald Henderson. You finally get Embiid back. So, I think you throw out that Laker game last week, and they had a good win earlier, against Brooklyn. They've been pretty competitive in some of these games. They're still trying to figure out how to win. So that I don't believe it's on for him, despite where their record is.
Yeah, but the GM, the owner, or the chairman, whatever you want to call Jerry Colangelo, they're not his guy. And we've seen plenty of examples where a guy didn't deserve to be fired where they were. Now, I'm actually with you mostly in the sense that there really isn't a natural replacement. I mean, Jim O'Brien is not, he's not the Colangelo's guy either. It's not like he's going to come in and coach a style that might be more pleasing to them. But at the end of the year, unless there is a significant surge from the Sixers where they close the season winning, 10 of their last 15 games or something like that, I just think they're going to look somewhere else. I really do. I just think anytime a new GM and coach and owner comes in or chairman comes in, it's natural to want your own guy, and this would be a perfect opportunity for Brian Colangelo to replace Brett Brown.
Well, when you ever get a new GM, you're under the gun, you're on an evaluation for either that year or however long. And I would certainly think that, not just, Coach Brown is under the evaluation, but I think everyone in that, that front office, besides some of the people that maybe Brian brought in there. And no, I mean, that's the fruits of the NBA or, any other sports league is that when you get a new ownership group, not like Philadelphia does, but when you do have a new management group, that is their duty. They can bring in who they feel fit from a comfort level, to run from on the sidelines. But if it wasn't me, I want to see what I can get, what I have in Ben Simmons, and hopefully he'll be back, sometime in the, late January, maybe February. Let's see him and Embiid play together, and then maybe take it from there. And if it doesn't work, then you cut bait and you look to hire somebody different this summer.
I tell you what, that if they do move on from Brett Brown at the end of the year, that's an appealing job. That's Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, another high draft pick. They got the Lakers pick coming too, right? At some point
they do. Yeah.
So two probable mid to high lottery picks. I mean, you're not going to get a more appealing coaching job for a rebuilding team in the NBA. I think there'll be coaches tripping over themselves to try to get in that situation and work for the Colangelos.
Well, and then you have that Sacramento pick in 2019 that's unprotected. Then you also have the rights possibly to swap with them this year if Chicago doesn't get that pick. So the organization is set up in a good place right now. Now it's just a matter of putting the pieces together. Staying healthy is always a big thing. Figuring out who fits, who doesn't, and and moving from there. But it's so hard though, Chris. When you're rebuilding, and this has been what, year three or four for this group, to try to take that next step, and when you kind of you're stuck in the mud, as I say, it's hard to get out of that.
Has your opinion of Sam Hinkie changed, and the opinion of the job he did changed over the last, say, 6 months to a year?
No, and I think I understand Sam a little bit better. When I got let go by the Nets in 2015, he was one of the first people that reached out to me, and I got to spend some time. I went down to Philadelphia and spent a day with him and his group down there, and really just picked his brain as far as his philosophy and how he did things, and I understood, what he was doing there. I think what really what doomed Sam in Philadelphia was that. He wasn't really a face of the organization, where he was not out front with from a media standpoint. That Okafor situation a year ago when he got in that fight in Boston. There was a couple other things there, and I don't. For me, I don't think that group took ownership of it, and kind of from a PR standpoint, I think that really hurt him. So I understood what Sam was doing. I think because he was so out front with with some of the moves they did, some of the contracts they possibly did. You know, it's one thing to tank, but it's another thing to put a really, you know, a poor product on the court. And they did, but with the understanding that, you know, we were going to retain a lot of, or we were going to get a lot of these assets. We were going to have cap space. And eventually by, you know, year four, I think we're in that now, that we'll see, start seeing some good things. And that's a long time to wait though, Chris.
Yeah. And look, I hate what he did, but it's hard to argue that the Sixers aren't set up pretty well for the long term. I mean, you've got two potential franchise players in Simmons and Embiid. Presumably, you can trade either Noel or Okafor for something of value. They've got huge problems in the backcourt, but I don't know, man. I you know, it's tough. I don't think teams will ever do what the Sixers did again. I just think the PR nonsense and the criticism will just be too loud. And as we've seen with Henke, you don't keep your job much long when you do. Stuff like that, but it's kind of hard to argue with the results that this team is set up for the long term. So
I don't know how you can have the restraint during that period of time, especially when you have that competitive spirit in you. And I understand for 1 year to do so, but to do it, you know, 2 or 3 years in a row, and to, you know, you're sitting at Christmas and you're 10-30 or 5-25,
oh,
and you're already out of it, and you still got another 4 months left of the season. And what are you selling the draft? And then you go into the draft and you don't get you get the third pick in the draft or the fourth pick in the draft. And basically that's how you've been building it through. And it's hard to sell. And that's the trouble when you get into, when you get into free agency, what type of product you're selling. And you saw, at least this summer, we saw some veterans there, and I know Bayless is out, but you've got Henderson and Rodriguez and, at least put a presence in that locker room.
I would like to see Philadelphia find a way to trade for someone like Ricky Rubio. I know that Ben Simmons coming back is theoretically going to be the point guard, but I wonder look, they want to play up tempo and they've got the players to do it. If you trade for a guy like Rubio, all of a sudden you've got kind of this open floor playmaker who admittedly is weak with the jump shot. But it seems to me, Bobby, that Rubio in Philadelphia would be a really good fit for a team that wants to play a certain style.
Well, here's a question for you, Chris. If Ricky Rubio was on the free agent market this summer, okay, would you pay him 2 years, $28 million? I think you can make that argument. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and that's what his numbers are. And
I think you would.
And I think that's why when you look at some of these guys who possibly could be on the, on a trade market, I think that's what the mindset you really have to do is look at how players were paid, this past summer. You know, players like Jeremy Lin, and I like his contract, 3 years, 36. But, you know, Rubio's contract somewhat mirrors that. Yep. So when you're looking at it from a trade standpoint, think of it, you know, hey, if this guy was a free agent right now, would I want to take in that money? And yep. I think you could certainly say yes.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's go from one miserable situation to another in Sacramento, where DeMarcus Cousins is at it again, most recently going after a Sacramento Bee columnist for one of the most benign reasons ever, Bobby. This Bee columnist mentioned an incident that Cousins' brother was involved in the penultimate graph of his story. Now, if you're trying to make a point, or if you're trying to embarrass or go after someone, you do it pretty high up in your story. You don't use it as a throwaway line in the second to last graph of the story. But this apparently set Cousins off. He went after this columnist in the locker room, stuck his finger in his face, cursed at him, all caught on video, of course. And now we have another incident with Cousins. Put yourself in Vlade Divac's shoes. What would you do to handle DeMarcus Cousins?
I would suspend him, Chris.
They don't have it.
From a trade standpoint, I'm sure that would hurt his value. But what hasn't hurt his value right now, Chris?
And plus, they're afraid of him out there, Bobby. They really are.
Hey, Chris, I saw we were in China in 2014. We played Sacramento there, and we had Paul Westphal on our staff who coached Cousins. I was probably sitting about six rows behind our bench, and I saw Cousins berate this man out in public where he was yelling basically every swear word at this guy during a game. And from a bully standpoint, and hey, does DeMarcus Cousins do a lot of good things outside of the basketball court? I'm sure he does. And I'm sure he does a lot of good things in the community and stuff like that. But that bully personality, you know, teams don't want to deal with that. And we've talked about him for like the last 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, it's almost ad nauseum right now. And I look at the Cousins situation where, you know, and I read the article and I thought it was going to be a lot worse than it was. And you're right. It was at the end of the story and his family's.
Yeah.
I mean, our family's off limit. I think to an extent. And I think the writer was trying to make a point where basically you got to make better judgment as far as where are the places that you hang out. And this is the second incident here. And my question is that you're in Sacramento. DeMarcus Cousins has been there 7 years. The Sacramento Bee is probably the only paper in town. So they need they need Sacramento, and the Kings organization needs them. If you're the PR director, and maybe they did this, why wouldn't you have talked to, say, DeMarcus Cousins and say, hey, there's this article that's out in the paper right now about, you know, some of the off-court stuff, and there's something about your brother. I'm making you aware of that. Would you like to sit down with the writer who wrote that? And maybe you can give your opinion on this. And I think you could have handled it that way. And maybe he did it and Cousin said, no, I don't want to deal with it. But there's certainly a way to do it. I know if you're in Oklahoma City and there was something about with Russell Westbrook, I would hope that, that their PR staff, who's very good, would sit down with both sides and say, this is why I did it. And Russell at least can kind of give his point of view.
There is nothing but upside to handling a situation that way. Because look, as a writer, and I've been covering the league for about 15 years now, I have had players upset with something that I've written. I have, and coaches too, I have had them come up to me in the locker room and had a frank but private discussion with me. I've been called into the coach's room in visiting locker rooms and had a frank but private discussion with me. And when it's civil, Bobby, you know, what's that old saying? You catch bees with honey or whatever that line is. I forget what that saying. Like you're more likely to have your point heard by doing that than going after somebody and embarrassing him in a public situation. Like, I don't know this columnist at all, but it sounds like he's been around for a long time and he didn't look at all intimidated at that moment. You're probably not going to engender the benefit of the doubt in any situation because of how you behave there. And to me, that was another in a long line of bad decisions by DeMarcus Cousins. Now the Sacramento Bee decided to ramp things up a little bit. They took this incident, created a video, and showed the last 12 months of DeMarcus Cousins going after not only this columnist beforehand, but local bloggers, Sactown Royalty, the blog there in Sacramento. So he's been doing this type of reporter intimidation for a long time, and it never works. It's never productive. Like I won't sit here and say that the coaches and the players that have had a blunt private discussion with me have earned the benefit of the doubt in stuff I've written, but they certainly have my respect, and I certainly understand their point of view a lot better than if one had just cursed me out in a media gaggle.
Well, and you saw KG in Boston, and what Kevin would do is basically, he would just say, hey, I'm not talking today. that's it.
I did that
that one day a week, he would sit down and, try to, get over, get his point out as far as, either regarding what's going on with the team. And, I don't get it, Chris. How do you think DeMarcus Cousins would handle the Boston media?
Oh, that's, I said this on the Comcast broadcast I was on the other night. If you're like a Dan Shaughnessy, like you camp out at DeMarcus Cousins' locker and you see what you can, and you ask him, pointed but fair questions, and you see what happens. Like the first time he explodes, you go right to him and deal with it. I had this discussion with people in the organization in Sacramento the last couple of days, and one thing they kept telling me was that DeMarcus reads everything. Like he is reading all of it. Like and I'm not saying this to, because I read every blog, every local market that has a blog, SB Nation, otherwise, I'm reading it. That's part of my daily routine. But if you're DeMarcus Cousins, why are you reading critical coverage on Sacktown Royalty? Like, why are you doing it? I'm not saying that to criticize this outlet, but like, why are you digging for that? Why are you digging for, for any kind of negative information about you, any kind of negative spin about you? Why are you doing it to yourself? I mean, stop stop reading it. To me, that's where it all begins. Stop reading all this negative coverage. I mean, I have heard so many stories over the last 36 hours or so from people in that organization about how sensitive he is and the things he takes personally. And that's amazing to me. If he takes stuff that personally in Sacramento, I think you're right. What if he winds up in a bigger market? What if he winds up in a place where there's more pressure on him? How does he handle it there? If I'm a team, and look, there are a lot of questions about DeMarcus Cousins from all the teams I talk to the point where I'm not exactly sure where a soft landing would be for him. But if I'm a team, I'm looking at this latest incident and saying, all right, I'm already worried about how he, you know, fit into my culture with the team. Now I have to be really worried about how he reacts to the first negative column about him. Because I actually think that what this guy mentioned in the column was kind of fair game. It wasn't like he was pointing out something that DeMarcus was involved with as well, with his brother. He wasn't just saying that DeMarcus's brother did this. DeMarcus was there. So, you know, that to me made it fair game. And I think anywhere else he goes, he's going to get similar treatment.
Well, you're the face of the franchise and you've got to use better judgment, especially, you know, Chris, what will be interesting here is that, you know, he's now qualified for this designated player exception that we see in this new CBA.
Oh, they're going to give it to him. Bobby, they're going to give it to him. Oh no, Bobby, there's no greater lock in the world than the 5-year max extension coming DeMarcus's way. I'm telling you, unless something significantly changes, that is a Vivek Ranadive move right there. Yeah, and I think they'll give it to him and he'll probably sign it.
So now he goes into this summer with 1 year left on his contract. And if he's not traded by the deadline, then we probably have an idea where this is going. He'll be eligible for a 5-year, $210 million contract. And now he will certainly be your face of your franchise. And good luck trying to get some free agents there. And you know, that's a huge, you know, $36-37 million cap hit. And I love his talent though, Chris. I mean, I love him. I watched him the other night against the Memphis game, and he was so good down the stretch, you know, when they needed some baskets. And I know he had some foul trouble there, but the talent is such a tease. But do you really want to deal with everything else that comes with it? That's your big question.
Yeah, and it gets harder and harder to defend him. And I've been a Cousins apologist for a pretty long time. I've, you know, said to anyone that's asked me that I would absolutely make a significant deal involving DeMarcus Cousins because of that talent and because of, you know, where he is, what his contract looks like, and my belief that if you take him out of that Sacramento circus, that he would be better in a more winning culture, more positive culture somewhere else. But I'm having a harder time. I'm almost throwing in the towel here, Bobby, on DeMarcus. And look, the reason I say that the Kings would offer that contract and he'd accept is where are his options? Like, where can you trade him right now? I don't believe that Boston would give up real assets to go get him. I don't think that the coaching staff there wants him. I don't think other situations that other teams that have real assets would give it up for him. You can probably trade him if you're Sacramento, but you're going to get 40 cents on the dollar. At this point, that's the market for him at the moment.
Well, no, you're right. And, you know, that if you do trade for him, then, you know, he wouldn't be eligible for that, you know, that designated player exception because it doesn't carry over to whatever team, your new team. So your cost would certainly be less. But, you know, and we talked about it 2 weeks ago, and I think you asked me, would I take him? And I said, yeah, if I had the right locker room and the right players, coaching and stuff. And now the more I read into it and the more I look at it, I can't answer that as a yes anymore just because of, you know, where he is right now. And it seems like as the weeks grow on, and Chris, between doing this, the podcast and the videos that we do, we should get a sponsorship.
Oh my God.
For how much we talk about Sacramento. I mean it's
look at last year,
the other 29 teams.
I wrote more about Sacramento last year with the George Karl situation, I think, than any other team in the NBA. I mean, I was writing about him firing an assistant coach at the trade deadline. I mean, this is, they continue to be just this ongoing narrative, and I don't know where it stops. I don't know how you stop it either.
Well, and then now I was reading, that Aaron Aflalo refused to go into the game the other night against Houston. And he's one of your good veterans that you brought in here. So it never seems to get better. And that 8 seed, I'm telling you, that 8 seed is up for grabs. And the way Portland has played, and I thought they would kind of right their ship, and it, you know, the way they played the other night in Golden State, I mean, God almighty, you know, losing by 40 plus points and not being able to, from a defensive standpoint, and you've got your point guard, you know, basically, you know, calling a team meeting, and You know, Denver's played better. Can Sacramento right the ship and stuff? You know, I believe, and I really do believe, I thought the eight teams were locked in, but I think that eight seed is up for grabs.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
And now a word from Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. Fast, powerful, and completely online, Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts out of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. Hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork? With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button, helping you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all this on your phone or tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/Mannix. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org number 3030.
Hi, boys and girls. It's Tony Kornheiser reminding you to subscribe and listen to my daily podcast, where we talk about everything from sports to politics to the impending animal revolution. And remember, you can listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play.
Now, one more question for you about Cousins. What do you make of Dave Yeager's full-throw defense of Cousins and basically full-throw criticism of what the Sacramento Bee did?
I would have protected my player. I don't know if I would have went the full course as far as going on an attack on the paper and then bringing up, you know, hey, I was, you know, my family or my kids or my wife was brought into a new story before. And I don't know if I would have gone that extent, but I would have certainly protected my player. But I don't know if I needed to go into a, you know, a full elaborate on why. And, you know, I liked what he said. He says, you know, he's a good teammate and he's, you know, I haven't had any issues with him and that from that point of view. But I think you cut it short there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, you have to defend your guy because you can't lose him. I mean, Cousins has had such a volatile relationship with coaches in the past that you've got to come back, you know, have his back in that. But I'm not sure I would have taken it as far as Dave did either. All right, let's move on. Blake Griffin. The LA Clippers. He is down now with knee injury, reportedly 3 to 6 weeks following a minor knee surgery. Shams Charania from The Vertical, the first to report that. You know, 3 to 6 weeks is not too long a time, but how worried are you about the Clippers' ability to kind of, you know, wade through this with not a lot of great options to replace Griffin?
Well, you know, they're where they stand and they had that loss in Washington over the weekend. And Blake was, you know, he had 26 points that game. And I saw him in Miami on Friday night, you know, and he had some, you know, some good moments too. It will be interesting how long he's out. If it's to mid-January and it's just a cleanup or, you know, end of January, I think you can hold the ship there. But, you know, now you start to distance yourself from where Golden State is and even possibly San Antonio. So now you're in that 3 to 4 range with certainly with Houston as well as they have played. So
yeah,
you're in that 3-4. I think there's some separation with Memphis, OKC. So that's the thing. And I always said, you know, as long as you can get to May or, you know, or in mid-April healthy, you know, they'll be okay. So, for me, it's basically more about seeding than anything. It's certainly a playoff team, but can the Brandon Bass and the Mo Spates kind of, you know, hold down the fort? That's going to be the interesting question.
What do you do with that starting lineup though? I mean, I know it doesn't necessarily matter because you're going to be working guys in and out, you know, multiple players and out, but you know, I wonder if they dust off Paul Pierce here and see what he can give them over a 3 or 4 week stretch. I mean, he's only played 7 games this season, averaging just over 11 minutes per game. But I would think in the starting lineup, and Pierce has started for Griffin in the past, most recently, I believe, in Brooklyn a couple of weeks back. But you know, to me, if you can extract anything out of Pierce over these next few weeks, he's the best fit for that starting lineup, playing a little bit of small ball, let Jordan do the dirty work in the paint, and see if Pierce can space the floor as kind of that stretch four that he's been in the past.
Well, then it wouldn't affect your rotation because you know, right now, you know, Pierce is not playing.
He's out of it,
So you put him in that four role and now you keep your bench as is. You know, just talking to the the guys with the Clippers, they said he's been great for them this year. You know, not from an on-court standpoint, but really been great in the locker room and mentoring some of these young players. So yeah, that is certainly a possibility. We did it in Brooklyn. They did it in Washington. Even in last year in Los Angeles around Christmas time, I think he had that against the Lakers on Christmas night. They put him at four and he played well. And you can experiment there because you can. He's not a three anymore at this point of his career. No. So, yeah, I mean, that's certainly an option to go. You know, you can almost do that with Bass. You know, he didn't play the other night against Washington, and can you can put him in the starting lineup and keep your bench together also.
Yeah, I'd give Pierce a turn. I'd see what he can do because Pierce is, you're right. He has been great. He's been kind of a mentor to Diamond Stone among others with that group, but. Yeah, if Pearson come in there and give them like 25 minutes per game over the next 3 weeks, that'll almost validate his decision to come back. He might not even have to play in the postseason, but if he can keep this team afloat or help keep it afloat during Blake's absence by playing 25, 30 minutes per night and contributing in that stretch before having to, you know, basically power it down because of how old he is, how little he has left at this point, that to me would make it worth having him back. Because right now, you know, the locker room stuff's great, but he's almost an assistant coach with the team right now. If you can get him, and I'm not sure he's capable of it, but if you can extract that from him, that would make it worth Pierce coming back.
Well, you know, from a production standpoint, you know, the most he's played this year is I think around 28 minutes in a game. So it's more of a placeholder for where, where they are right now.
Right.
You know, from a schedule standpoint, you've got, you know, it's relatively soft, I would say, until, right before the New Year's with, you know, you got Denver. I know you got San Antonio, Dallas, Lakers, Denver, New Orleans. So I think you can certainly hold the fort until you get into into January, but he didn't have much against Brooklyn in that game.
No,
he won one for seven. So, but I got there early on in Miami on Friday night and got to see him warm up and everything. So, I know it's different from warming up than when you step on the court and everything. But that will certainly be interesting as far as what they do there.
Maybe it's just wishful thinking on my part that Pierce could have one last hurrah in like late December, early January to contribute to a team one more time. All right, let's move on. And I know you and Woj talked about a lot of the CBA wrinkles in last week's podcast, but I'm curious about the impact this new collective bargaining agreement is going to have on the Warriors. Not only did they have to sign Kevin Durant, clear some space for that, they're going to have to pay Durant, presumably next summer, pay Steph Curry coming up. A lot of big numbers they're going to have to throw around, Bobby, in the next couple of years. How does the change in the CBA affect them?
Well, a couple of things, Chris. How I look at with Golden State, you'll be able to retain your core four guys, but it's going to have to come out at a sacrifice of some of your bench players. And if you look at their roster, you have to look at it almost like you're going into an expansion draft, and you can protect six or seven players. And for Golden State position, the two guys who are likely going to be out are Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala, because they have such a high cap hold. So if you go by, if you break it down, basically what's going to happen is, let's put it this way. If Durant opts in of his current contract, then they'll be in fine shape, because then you can just sign those two players with bird rights. But if he opts out and signs that $36 million contract, which is about $3 million more than what we had projected to be, now you've got to really figure out what you want to do with your roster. And, when you renounce those two guys, you could potentially have some cap space, not much, to get a guy in free agency around $5 million, but that would come at the cost of renouncing all your other free agents except a player like Ian Clark. So your payroll is going to be high. Then you circle back and you pay Curry $36 million, because he's a tier one max, because he can fit into that designated player rule what they have now, because he'll make all NBA. At the end of the day, you're looking at a $135 million payroll for this team. And it's certainly only going to get higher because you've got four guys making close to $110 million. You'll have that same situation next year where you're basically relying on hopefully some of your younger players and, you know, your first round pick in 2018 and finding some under the radar players. But then it gets really interesting when you get to, you know, when Clay's a free agent. You know, do you want to pay him that much money? So you'll have, you know, three guys locked in at $120 million and, you know, he might be qualified for that, you know, designated player exception. So it's the price you pay when you have four all-stars, you know, on the court. And for Golden State, I think it's certainly worth, you know, it's worth the, you know, from an ownership investment because you'll have a championship worthy team for, you know, the next 3 or 4 years here.
And you got to figure that they're bound to get at least one ring chaser a year, right? Like one David West type or somebody that fits that mold that be willing to take a lot less money to play for the Warriors. So I think they'll fill a roster spot with one of those guys every year. But after that, you know, it becomes really incumbent on Bob Myers and his staff to draft well. And they've done that, you know, like, no question. I mean, even Patrick McCaw, a kid that looks like he's going to turn to a player for them, is someone that can become a valued member of the rotation over the next few years. But as we move forward in 17 and 18 and 19, not just those first round picks, Bobby, but those second round picks, they've got to hit them. They've got to find the talent in that second round that can contribute to their rotation because that's all they're going to be able to afford with the money they're going to have to dish out.
That's going to be the key. It's almost like they're going to have to follow the blueprint that Memphis did, you know, as far as finding some under the radar players, some second round picks. Even in the first round, it's going to be very key for the Patrick McCaws, the Kevon Looney's, the Damian Joneses of the world, their first round pick in 2018. Can you find an undrafted player? Heavy emphasis on player development because that's what you're going to be looking at, as well as if you have a room mid-level exception worth $4 million and then you have some of your minimums to fill out your roster, and you're going to have to go through that same same process. It's almost like what the Clippers had to do the last couple of years, where you're basically every year you're kind of turning over your bench, albeit though the Golden State still has some of their current first round picks that the Clippers don't have, so that's going to be the big thing for Golden State. And then when you get to Clay as a free agent and then Draymond, then you really got to figure out what you want to do.
All right, before we finish up, I know you've been diligently reviewing the new collective bargaining agreement. What we know, that must be some really exciting reading there, Bobby. But as you've kind of combed through it, it's a real page turner, I'm sure. As you've combed through it, anything that we don't already kind of know about stand out? I mean, look, we know that the NBA's willingness to go back to basically 6-year deals is notable because it shows their commitment to trying everything they possibly can do to keep players in their own markets and help those small market teams out. But as you review it, what else kind of jumps out to you?
Well, before we jump in there, Christmas came early for me, about a week early with the term sheet when on Sunday night. My wife thinks I'm nuts because, I was like waiting by my computer to get it. And when I got it, it was like, my firstborn was just coming into the world.
Some people wait up for J.K. Rowling books. You look for term sheets from CBA talks.
But when I look at it and I start breaking down a couple things that come into play, it looks like teams really had an issue with how restricted free agency happened the last 3 or 4 years. We've seen now that from 3 days, from the matching period goes from 3 days to 2 days now. We'll never see a contract like Brooklyn did with Tyler Johnson, where you were able to construct it where you're basically backloading the deal in Miami. When they match it, you get cap hits of 18 and 19 in years 3 and 4. Basically, now the matching team on non-first round picks can average out the player. The designated player exception, the extension or signing a player, like we'll see with Steph Curry, for basically players who are who have 8 or 9 years of experience, will be a free agent or an extension and hit all NBA criteria, you can give him a higher percentage. That's interesting, but there's not that many players that fall into that category. We talked about Cousins, possibly Paul George this summer if he makes All NBA. You know, the season, of course, has gotten gotten shorter as far as from a time standpoint, where it's going to start in mid mid October now. They're actually going to add some days onto the season, so it's usually 170 days. Now it's going to be 177 days. So we'll see that the season end a little bit later, a week later than it normally did. But I always said it's almost like an addendum to the 2011 CBA, where they basically put a lot of those rules are in place. Now we've kind of tinkered with some new ones here.
Well, that's good stuff, Bobby. I'm sure you'll have much more for us later on. And believe me, I know the audience out there is anxiously awaiting more.
Would you like for me to do like a books on tape for the new CBA, and you can put it in your, on your phone, you listen on the subway? And
well, I was going to say you can put it in my phone. I can listen to it before I go to sleep. I mean, that'll put me down. That'll put me down fast there. All right, Bobby, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for joining me here on the podcast.
Thanks, Chris.
That's it for this week. My thanks to Bobby Marks for joining the show. Don't forget, you can check out archive podcasts on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, give us a rating, leave a comment. You know I appreciate it. As always, you can check out The Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick and The Vertical Podcast with Woj. And I'll see you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.